and welcome to another episode of Candid, where we have real talks with real people. My name is Anise, and I'm here with Shanae Forbes and Dudley Turnquest. Bethany will be popping in a little bit later. Today's episode will be our last of our four-part series on health and wellness. In our first episode, we focused on the most controversial vegan diet with Marlene McKinney of Something Better Vegan Vegetarian Deli. In our second episode, we dove into fitness and exercise with Bowflex Barbie. In our third episode, we brought awareness to National Kidney Month with the president of the Bahamas Kidney Association, Tamika Roberts, and dialysis patient, Rudir Roll. But today we thought we'd slow it down a bit and get deep and honest and open about our feelings. Because when we think about health and wellness, we often overlook the most important organ, which is our brain. Unlike your liver or your leg, oftentimes your brain doesn't deliver like a sharp pain when you're not feeling well. These symptoms are often start off pretty subtle with disrupted sleep, irritability, a lack of interest in activities you often enjoyed, changes in appetite, whether that be an increase or a decrease in the amount of food that you eat, and low energy. We've all been going through it due to the effects of Hurricane Dorian, the pandemic, and the war in Ukraine. And I think that I speak for Shanae, Dudley, and I when I say that we've experienced it as well. Ironically enough, recently the three of us have sought professional help as trying to be a student, a family member, an intern, an employee, and so much more is weighing on all of us. So I'm going to open up the floor for all of us, my co-hosts, to be candid about their experiences with seeking professional help in terms of mental health.
Yeah, seeking help, professional help with mental health. I've been down bad in a pit of depression for a long time. So trust me, it don't come easy. It's take you a long time to be there. Like, oh, you know, maybe I'll get help. And I'm sure a big part of it is the societal stigma that exists against going to a therapist. Like everybody would be like, oh, you're probably just gonna go in Sunderland's, or everybody else could judge you. But I can tell you that when you start getting like real help and you sitting there and you're therapist is listening to you, at first you feel like, ah, yes, they're just listening like everyone else. But then they start to help you out and it's be like, hold on, is this working for real? That's crazy. So seeking professional help is it's always a good idea. It's just the hardest part is to get over that initial hump, you know. It's just, yeah, you start it when you're ready, and then you have to accept the remainder of the process.
Yeah, the symptoms just start to build up until you look back on the person who you were a year ago or even a month ago, and you're like, wow, that was a completely different person. And acceptance is key, and understanding, like, you're not crazy. You're not, like, it's not weird to seek professional help. Just like how your legs or your organs are apart, like they need professional help, you go to a doctor for your inside organs. Why couldn't you go to a doctor for your mental health? And your brain controls all of that.
I was gonna say, like Dudley was saying, with having to get past the stigma. Well, for me, it was I had a different experience, because my mom, she actually studied psychology, and we were raised in a, we were always taught to like express ourselves, at least in my household, to express ourselves and stuff. And for me, it wasn't necessarily getting over the hump and knowing that, it wasn't getting over the hump of the stigma. For me, it was about the financial situation and how I was going to afford therapy. And that was the biggest thing for me. Because therapy isn't cheap. And like, I know that, you know, I have problems and I need to address these problems, but I think something that we need to focus on is making therapy accessible in the country for those that need it, because a lot of people can't afford $100 sessions or $150 sessions to help their brain. A lot of people can't afford to go to the doctor if they have an infection. So imagine if they realize that, hey, I'm not okay and I need to talk to somebody. It's kind of difficult. So I think that's something that we need to also address in the country, the stigma and trying to make it as accessible as possible.
I think the rate of, is actually pretty standard. Actually, I have a friend who she lives in America, and her therapy sessions are actually more. I don't think it's a problem. I don't think we need to make therapy more accessible. I think we have to do something that's a completely different thing. We have to pay people more. Because if you could afford, if you can afford it, like, it's already cheap. It's actually cheaper to get therapy here than to get therapy in the States. Believe it or not, it's crazy, I know. But if you can't afford, if you can't afford a gallon of gas after working for an hour, there's no way you're going to be able to afford to fix, to get an infection checked out or to get your brain, you know, to get help with your brain, because that takes a long time to fix.
I completely agree with you guys. Mm-hmm. And actually, like, reading up in the news, they have been, well, first of all, they changed it from the Ministry of Health to the Ministry of Health and Wellness, because one of the initiatives that the Davis administration wanted to focus on was mental health, especially for young adults, because that is something that we struggle with, and we're open about that. We don't hide our feelings. And they have been working on the Mental Health Act, actually. So I hope to see change. And I do agree that it's more than just like free sessions, because I'm sure you could get those at Sandilands. And it's more than just getting up and deciding you want to go. It's more about the how accessible it is. I'm also, like, I do think that businesses should be more vigilant of that, and host HR departments should be a lot more respect, like, they should focus more on ensuring that company morale is up, because that also plays a big part in our mental health. Because if you go to a job that you hate 40 hours a week, it's gonna strain, like, on your mental health. It's gonna create a big strain.
I think one of the biggest things we have to remember too is that I'm sure for us and for a lot of people out there, one of the most common mental health problems that you face is depression. However, we do have to remember that there is a whole spectrum of different things that can go wrong with your mental health. And so when you, like earlier when you said, you can get sessions for free at Sandilands, that is an option. You can register at Sandilands to get help. But as a person who has been to Sandilands to get help, I can tell you that you can be as depressed as you want. When they see somebody else who is a grown adult thinking that they're 5 years old, it's gonna be like, we're gonna get to you when we finish dealing with this. And it's very hard to tell somebody whose brain has convinced them that they are five, so that, you know, they're not five.
I think that a lot of what we call Joneses, they have mental health issues that aren't addressed, and people always just blame it on drugs. And I think a lot of it is because of drugs too, but a lot of them, sometimes they go to drugs because they're not getting the help that they want or need. And it's a scary thing. I do understand that. But you do need your family's backing to get into that and to continue to work on, because at the end of the day, you can go to a therapy session, you can go get help, you can do all of that. But if you're not practicing, and if you're not strong-willed enough to continue to practice what they're telling you to do, then you're going to revert right back to square one.
So I have a question that I want to ask y'all. So do you think that we're teaching enough about mental health in the schools? Because I think, at least in my high school experience, I don't ever remember talking about it a lot. And I think it starts there as well. That should be something that is discussed in health science or whatever science that you do. So what are you guys' thoughts on that?
I think me and Desley are going to say the same thing, where I think that they always tell us to pray about it. And yes, you should pray about it. You should talk to God about it. But sometimes God is telling you to seek help. Sometimes it's deeper than just prayer. And I know I'm going to get so much backlash for that.
Come on, you're gonna you always told to pray about it.
Listen, I went to so many different religious schools, but like a lot of times, like even at home, they tell you to pray about it.
I went to a religious school too. They didn't tell us to pray about it. However, I would say that the guidance counselors that were there when I was at my high school, they were pretty open, and they were very young. So they didn't stick to the whole idea of telling you to just pray about it. I would say that they probably helped a lot of the students that went to them. Now, to be completely honest, I never went to the guidance counselor for my problems. I think the only couple times the guidance counselor saw me was for the community service thing that you have to do. And then one time I got into a physical altercation and they wanted to ask me if I was okay. So I never actually took advantage of the guidance counselors, but from what the students around me said at the time, they were pretty good. And then the only person who would tell you to pray about it would be like the school chaplain. But instead of telling you to pray about it, he would actually pray with you right then and there about it. I'm speaking from personal experience. I did not tell him that I was depressed once again, but I did, you know, I was an angry little boy. So we had to pray that angry demon out of my spirit. And you know, it worked kind of.
I'm glad to hear that you had that experience at your school, which is great. And I commend those counselors, but child, at my school, they didn't have that experience. The guidance counselor barely wanted to see you. They only wanted to talk with you when they weren't getting your business and give you tea when something wrong with you. So,
so you went to the same school, so yeah. It was always just tea. You want some tea?
You can break your leg and you're getting tea, bro. Like, you in pain, they have to go out in the ambulance, and you're getting tea. Okay.
And you never trust guidance counselors sometimes, especially like in smaller schools, because you know they're going to gossip to the other teachers, or they're going to tell the other teachers your business, whether it be like malicious or not. I don't think it would ever be like from malicious intent, but they'd tell the other teachers to like pray for you or whatever, because, and then they'd be specific in your issues, and that's scary. You don't want everyone to know your business.
But that's the thing, though. When you think about all the social ills in our country, all the abuse, all the molestation going on, you know how much things children keep on their hearts and on their minds, and that weighs so heavily on their mental health. And for like for instance, I went to a small school myself. And so if I knew that when Sally went to the counselor and I could still find out what Sally told the counselor, that discourages one from actually going for help. And that's something that I think a lot of times people take very lightly, because I know a lot of people, and even, you know, I've experienced some sort of abuse, and I think most people have experienced some sort of abuse, but they don't speak on it. And especially, you know, when you've experienced it and had to live with it for such a long time, some people just, you know, they adapt, but others don't. And for the people who don't, it's very hard to, you know, kind of interpret some things like others would, or go about life the way others would. Sometimes we look at them as strange and we don't really know what's going on with them personally, but sometimes that mental aspect of, you know, childhood trauma, that's something that can ruin people.
Childhood trauma had me held in the dance by the waist for the longest time. And I didn't even have childhood trauma from home. I had childhood trauma from school. So you could imagine every day is just there like, wow, this sucks. Oh, well, I guess I got to go here for another 8.5 hours, sometimes until later, where after they somehow bamboozled me into joining some after school clubs and giving me responsibilities in the school. It's like, wow, this place is making me suffer and I gotta be here for longer than the 8 hours I used to be here for. Yikes.
But look at these schools now, though. We having more crime, more stabbings. I heard, I don't know if it's true, but allegedly there was a student who brought a gun to school. And I'm here thinking, imagine those students who have to who have to be in that sort of environment for a whole 8 hours. That's their parents get for their children to go to school. Imagine the children fearful of their lives. That sort of fear and that sort of you know, environment can have such an impact on people's mental health. I don't understand how a lot of students at government schools, I don't understand how they deal with it. Because I know I would have been, I don't know if I could have wake up to go to school because I'd be so fearful. And yeah. A lot of times parents need to, like, sometimes you get this pull from your child that, okay, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. And a lot of times we just push it off as them being lazy or, you know, them just not wanting to do something. But sometimes there are reasons that children don't want to do certain things. They don't want to go to school. They don't want to do certain things. And we need to probe them sometimes to kind, and we need to also be open with them about their feelings and what's going on in their lives at home, school, church, because we never know who is out there hurting or influencing our young people and even adults, because adults can be influenced just as much as young people. And so we have to keep a very close eye out for the people that we love.
Yeah, I agree. And speaking of schools, not to backtrack, but I think that we do have therapists in school, kind of. It would be like that teacher that you confide in, that you trust. And I think that a lot of us had that. And it was never the guidance counselor. It was always like your PE teacher or a science teacher. And I had that in our school. Even if you didn't feel that you could tell them your private business or tell them what happened at school, you could always trust that they would be there when you just needed someone to talk to get your mind off whatever you're going through at home or whatever you're going through at school and to put your mind at ease. And I could even like tell a specific story where I remember right when my aunt had died, I was going through it. Like, I didn't know how to express it. And I just felt like at my small young age of 12 years old, I thought I have to be strong for everyone else. No one asked me to do that, but I just felt like I had to do that. And it started to like affect my schoolwork. And I don't know, but a teacher noticed that and he pulled me to the side and he said, "What's going on? Like, are you okay?" And I just broke down, because even if the person doesn't tell you what's happening, it's just the fact that there's someone who realizes or notices a change in you that is sometimes just enough.
Man, that wasn't your English teacher for you? My English teacher.
Yeah, that was my English teacher.
Wait, listen, it's always your English teacher. You see, we like to make, for those of you who did literature inside high school, we always like to make fun of them for saying that when the curtain blue is representing the author talking about how DM blah, 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 blah. We always make these jokes, but it's always your English teacher.
Yeah, because they read them between the lines and things.
Yes, there's me. Wait, my school became slick because my English teacher also happened to be my homeroom teacher. So whenever they wanted me to do something, the administration used to tell my homeroom teacher to ask me to do it, because she was like, you know, she understood me. She was cool. And it was very hard for me to tell her no, because she was a sweetheart. She was my fondest memories in high school was in that class and or talking to her. So after they figured that out, it was a wrap for me. Like, everything that they needed, they filtered through her. And when I caught on to it, I was like, it's too late, but I see what you guys have done.
What I was going to say was talking about what Bethany was talking about with the safety in schools, because I have a cousin who was close in age with me, and he went to different schools than me, obviously. Well, at the time, he moved to my school later on, but when he was in junior high, he attended a school, and he basically was saying how he was afraid to go to school because of the things that children would do or attempt to do to him, or just bringing knives and threatening other children and stuff. And basically he was like, he couldn't focus because he was always so afraid of what could happen. And I was just like, no child should feel unsafe in school and not have an outlet or someone or a teacher that they could trust and talk to, or just an adult in general. And that just goes to show, like, I don't want to say that we don't take it seriously, but it's just, how school shouldn't be a place where you're afraid. It should be almost like a home away from home, because that's where you spend a lot of your time before you become an adult. And I just thought that that was very disheartening. And even recently with the stabbing that happened at AF Abbey, I believe, like, I can't imagine how those children felt. And I remember a couple of years ago, Doris Johnson, it didn't happen at the school, but a student had gotten stabbed. I think it was in front of Blanco Bleach. And it's just like situations like that, it's just disheartening, because these kids go into school to learn, and their parents tell them bye. They go to school and some of them don't come back home, and that's just really sad.
Not to stray too far off from topic, at least in the educational aspect. I think even in the workforce, a lot of times employers take advantage of the laws that are in place in the country. Like, I know for most people, they only have 7 sick days per year. And as human beings, it's like, what are we robots to you people? I'm like, imagine just having 7 sick days out of like maybe 250. People have children, people have certain things going on besides work. Yet we only have 7 days to be human, just 7. I know for me, this year, mentally, it's been very strenuous. And sometimes I take those sick days for my mental health. I just need to breathe. I don't do anything. I just stay home and regain my identity, because it's like you could find yourself losing who you are by just continuously, you know, doing things, the pattern you've already accumulated. Go wake up, get ready, go to work, wake up. It's very draining at times. And I think as a country, we should look into that. Like, I know there are certain companies that give their staff like I don't know what they call it, but it's free days.
Personal where days, they yeah. could
yeah where they could just, you know, if they find it that work is being too pressuring or whatever, you just take that day off and you relax and you come back. Because I think a lot of times, so many people are so stressed out by work, by home, by whatever they're dealing with, and they have no source they have no way of saying, okay, let me take a breather. And that's something that we as a country need to look into. Like the 7 days thing, it's been too long. We need to change that. I don't know about y'all, but I think we need to change that.
I completely agree. I think that the weirdest part is you have the worst work atmospheres at the places that pay you the least. And it's like, ain't that what you're supposed to have, the best working atmosphere? You had to give me something else, because you're telling me you're paying me, what, $225 a week. And most of that is going to my children or my household or bills. And then you're going to sit there and say, hey, you're easily replaceable, because there's other women who need this job. There's other women who could use this job. Your mental health doesn't matter to me, because whatever. Or you're like, it's, that's why a lot of millennials and I think Gen Zs aren't hot up to get into the workforce, because we're just like, you're not going to demean me, you're not going to make me feel lesser than for a check. And I get it, like, the world goes around off of a check, but I can't give you my best work until I'm my best person.
See, that's the problem with y'all young people now. Y'all don't
whatever, Dudley.
y'all ain't hearing the messaging. You got 1 week to be sick. After that 7th day, I don't want to hear a cough. I don't even cough. Don't even cough in there. I want to cough. I don't want your sinus to trigger during the new season. I don't want the AC making your sinus activate in this office. You had 7 days to get over this. Anyway, jokes aside. Well, I hope that, you know, people recognize that I was a joke. But anyway, yeah, man. When you said, like, oh, there's other women that need that job, I was just there like, man, I could do the perfect rendition of being a guy on a job. And you try to tell your supervisors, like, hey, you know, I feel like I have a problem with my mental health right now. I think I need a break. I give you a perfect rendition of their reaction. You hear that silence just now? That was the reaction. Ain't nobody like they don't even give you the option of being like, hey, oh yeah, there's another man out there that needs that job. They just be like, they just look at you like, wait, I'd ask you all this if you don't get back to it.
Yeah, so I think that, so like I said, Dudley, Shanae, and I, we've sought therapy. I have been only once. So I'll just talk about my experience. I'll say that in my one time going there, I had a preconceived notion of what I thought it would be like, but that man read me like a book. He pointed out things that I didn't even see were issues. And one advice that I would pass on that he told me was to take control of your emotions. And it sounds so simple, but it's way harder than that. Be control of your emotions and understand that you have to say, instead of saying like, the situation upset me, just say that I don't like the situation and I'm upset because I choose how I feel. And it sounds so silly, but when you don't let others control your emotions, or when in your brain you're telling yourself that I feel upset so I can decide to like turn that switch off and not be upset, then you feel more empowered. And then another thing that I will advise people to do is exercise, as hard as it is. And I'm not good at it either. That man told me to exercise about a week ago and I exercised once. But exercising helps because it increases blood flow and to your brain especially, and it increases blood flow to areas that control stress, that control anxiety, that increase endorphins, which is basically like the happy hormone. So even at the end of your workout, you may feel tired, but if you continue doing it, you feel kind of elated, one, because you completed the task, you did something hard, and you can give yourself props for that. And then you just feel better overall because you feel healthier from the inside out. Shanae, do you want to share your experience?
Yeah, I went to therapist that was suggested to me by a fellow student, and I mean, I don't know if my session was as insightful as yours, but he did tell me to work on trust and basically arrange what issues I want to work on. Yeah, that's basically it. But for me, I had like a history of, for me, I was bullied a lot, and not like by friends, you know, by my family. They would always, because I was younger, I was a fat kid. I mean, I still fat, but when I was younger, I was like a big roly-poly, like I looked like a big ball. And my family would always like pick on me for that. And at first, it didn't really bother me, I guess. But as I got older, it kind of just really chewed away at my like self-confidence and stuff. And I remember one day specifically, I think it was like my 11th birthday. I think I was in grade 6, and it was my birthday party. And normally my mommy, she would take me and buy me like new clothes for my birthday, but she's like, use stuff in your closet. So I tried on like 4 or 5 stuff and it couldn't fit. And I promise you, I cried and I had a mental breakdown. Granted, my mommy didn't buy me clothes from a year. So obviously you was a growing child. You ain't got just, you growing. You could go cool stuff. But it just really bothered me. And I sat there and I cried. And I cried because I couldn't fit the old clothes in my closet. But it was just like, you have to be careful how you allow people to affect your life. And that's something I have to work on, not letting people get to me. And like Anisha was saying, with you controlling your emotions and stuff, that's something I also have to work on. So for me, I would say just try your best to think positively about yourself and to not let people get you down. That's my advice.
Yeah, so I think it's I'm gonna go a little bit deeper than you guys, but it's not to flex or nothing. It's because I truly believe that even though we're starting to take mental health more seriously, we still expect everybody to be machines, and more so than like society has a lot of high standards for women, but society also expects men to somehow be made out of rock and never be emotional. So excuse me while I open up a little bit. So the first thing is like, I'm I'm 24 and I've been depressed for 16 years. If you do maths quick, that's like three quarters of my life. So I haven't really, so when people say, oh man, I can't, I've forgotten the person who I used to be ever since I've been depressed. I'll always be there like, man, at least you can remember who that was. The last time I felt that way, I was a kid. So I've been going to therapy pretty much every week for over a month now. And it's been extremely helpful. It's been eye-opening. I had my big epiphany moment where I figured out what everything wrong with me was, and I cried like a big old baby in front of my therapist for like 20 minutes. And that's like one of the most satisfying cries I've ever had in my life. She didn't even say nothing. She just let me cry. I would try to talk, but then I just kept crying, and I kept crying and crying and crying and crying until it was all out. And then from there, it's like, you know, when you realize the crux of why you're down, then that's when you can start that's when you can really start the progress of healing from it. So I came to that point. And I mean, being depressed in the way that I am, I mean, it's been this way since I was a kid. So obviously it evolved. The way I was depressed changed. I was like before I was just really, really sad. And then eventually I was really, really angry. And then when I got older, a bunch of different stuff happened. So, you know, depression isn't the same for everybody. Depression isn't always just being really sad. It comes in many different ways. And growing up with it, it changed a lot of times for me throughout my life. So, and I go through a specific kind of therapy. I go through what is called cognitive behavioral therapy. So it's taking my thoughts and my actions and changing them from what they are, which are pretty much some of the most toxic things that you could ever do to yourself, and then changing them into not toxic things that you can do to yourself, like exercising. Like I'm a pretty big guy, naturally and through genes. I'm just big. So I put on weight easy, but I put on muscle easy. So it's like the other day I realized like I was doing strength training and I put on muscle. So the weight on the scale went up. And you know, normally when you exercise, like, damn, the scale is supposed to be going down, but it went up. So you instead, like before, if I wasn't doing therapy, I would have just been like, well, exercising isn't working. So I guess I'll go eat my problems away since I'm fat and I'm going to be destined to be fat forever. But since I do therapy, it's just they're like, yeah, maybe I just have to change it up. Maybe I just have to do more cardio instead of more strength. And then I lost a couple of pounds. So it's like, you know, it's just a very soft example of what the therapy has helped me with. So I don't know if people consider that to be oversharing or whatever, but I think is, I mean, you know, there's probably some guy around my age listening to this, or younger or older, and they probably needed to hear that there is another pretty, pretty messed up guy out there too. You're not alone. You can go and get therapy at your own pace and at your own time, but it'll probably make you a better guy for it overall, if not just a better human being. So try therapy out. I mean, the first session might cost you a little bit, but you know, if you can make it through session one, you can definitely make it through session two. And yeah, this goes on from there. You'll figure out if that's the therapist for you.
Yeah. And yeah, like you said, if that's a therapist for you, because sometimes the first therapist that you go to may not be the right one. Sometimes there's different types of therapy. Like Dudley said, he goes through cognitive therapy. So if cognitive therapy doesn't work for you, then try something else. Speaking of cognitive therapy, I wanted to talk about like different ways that we negatively impact ourselves. Like one way of negatively impacting yourself in the way you think is all or nothing thinking, which is like thinking in a black and white type of way. You ever thought like that, where you're like, if you're not perfect, then you're nothing?
Yeah, I was just me with the weight. I was like, hey, yo, this exercising ain't cutting it. Well, time to never exercise again. I just talked myself out of it because I went to therapy.
Yeah, and then there's also overgeneralizations where you you take one aspect of something and you continuously say, well, if I didn't do a good job, then I'm never going to do a job, good job in anything. And that's another negative way of thinking. And then disqualifying the positive, where you just focus on all the negative aspects of yourself. And that's something that did pop up in my therapy session. He called me a pessimist, I think. And I've told a couple people, I told my close friends what was said, and they all agreed that I was a pessimist. And I just think it's so interesting that everyone, you can go through the same situation as everyone, but when you think about something, you may think about it in completely different light than anyone else. And I would always think so negatively about things. And it wasn't like I want to think negatively. It's more like you have to train yourself out of that, because sometimes you get let down so much that all you can do is think negatively before you even do something. So what I will say is sometimes I think that we have to try to give ourselves a chance and give others a chance. Have you all ever experienced that?
Oh, yeah. No, I've been a pessimist my whole life. You see, I think one of the crazy things about being depressed for as long as I have, you can always see bits and pieces of it in people, or you can just straight up look at somebody and be like, oh, yeah, you're here. You're in the same space as me. Welcome. Welcome to the club. We have drinks over here.
You know, it's funny. The reason I actually went to a therapist, I actually was trying to look for one because I ain't got the bub to be doing that right now because, you know, intern, free intern, doing school, I'm broke. But my, I guess I can call him my mentor. He shared with me a person that I could go to for free. And the reason that he thought that I should go to therapy is because of the small jokes I would make. I make a lot of very dark jokes. And I think that pessimists realize pessimists, and sometimes others will like look at you weird when you make a dark joke, and you're like, oh well, it's just, that's just my personality. And yeah, maybe it is just your personality, but at a certain point it's a cry for help, you know.
I mean, the two of us make pretty dark jokes with each other all the time. Yeah. Yeah. You know, the people, it doesn't happen on here.
No.
You know? But yeah, you just look at somebody, it's like, oh, you're making the same jokes as me. Ah, you're in the same boat. Welcome to the club. Like, we got drinks, we got cookies, and sometimes we cry about it in our own rooms, but we'll never cry about it together.
And that's another thing I experienced. Sometimes I would just, oh, I'm oversharing so much. Sometimes I would just cry and I wouldn't know why, but I would just feel overwhelmed. And that feeling, it's not good. And it makes you want to be more pessimistic because you're like, wow, like, I don't even know why I feel this way, but I feel this way. So what do you do now?
Man, I got to a point after getting to my big growing age, I got to a point where I couldn't, like, I cried so much I couldn't cry anymore. Like, yeah, like the parts around my eyes just used to hurt, and I was just there like, oh, this is where the tears are supposed to be. Okay then. But you know, recently I've rediscovered my tear ducts. They've opened again, and now I can cry whenever I feel like it. Well, you know, I don't know. I just have turned into a not so sad guy. I'm just like I tell people all the time, I'm depressed in a way that I'm not really sad. I'm just miserable. Like, I'm a horribly miserable person to be around for long periods of time. Don't mind me making jokes on here and me being a little funny sometimes. No, I'm like, if you spend time around me, you just be there like, Jesus, what's wrong with this boy? What what happened to him? So I don't cry about it. I just go like, leave me alone. Like, get out my face, get out my space.
Yeah, and that's also a symptom of it when you just try to just be by yourself when you need the most people the most. Shanae, you wanted to say something?
Okay, I am actually the complete opposite of you guys. I am not a pessimist. I don't see the worst in people. I mean, I see it sometimes, but I try not to.
Okay, not I in people, you know. When you're a pessimist, you see the worst in everything, in every situation.
Yeah. I know, yeah, I don't do that. I try to see the best in everything, and sometimes that can be very not good for me, because when you tend to be a nice person or overly nice person, or you always try to help people, which, and there's nothing wrong with helping people, but I realized that what I do is I take on people's problems and I try to solve their problems, and I am an extremely anxious person, and I realized that what I'm doing is as a result of my anxiety. And what it does is, me trying to help everybody in return leaves me overworked, overwhelmed, and I barely have time for myself. So I am slowly trying to unlearn that behavior, because it's toxic when you think about it, because I'm always giving all the time. And I actually didn't even realize that that was as a result of anxiety, because I've been anxious my whole life. I've always had anxiety. I've always been socially awkward. Like, only in my, since I started doing journalism, it's forced me to be more open. I would not be able, if I go into a room, I could barely say good afternoon. I don't like talking to people. That is just me. Granted, I talk to people I know, you know, and I can be very, very friendly with people I know. Or if you approach me, I can have a conversation with you, but I'm not the person to start conversations. I will sit in a room with 10 people. They could conversate with each other, but I will not jump in the conversation. And that was just me. And yeah, I was just really severely anxious. And I found it interesting, because it wasn't until I saw a post by, I don't know if y'all know, but Harrison, the therapist who's on Facebook. I actually went to him before for a few sessions after I was diagnosed with cancer as a kid. And it wasn't until I saw one of his posts, and he was basically explaining like how aspect of anxiety, and I was like, this is really me. This is, he literally just explained my whole being in one Facebook post. And then someone had asked, well, what happens if you can't deliver to someone? And it said, and he basically was like, it makes you feel it overwhelms you, and you feel like you're not sufficient. And I found that very interesting, because most times I figure it out. I very, very rarely I don't do what I say I'm going to do. And as a result, I just, like I said, I'm always tired. I'm always burnt out and stuff. So yeah, Dred. So that's my problems. Now everybody know, all the listeners know.
They're getting deep into us today.
Yeah.
Well, I know the listeners coming away from this episode, and they could be like, Jesus, what's wrong with this? What's wrong with you?
He's a broken people.
How they get here? And why they're exactly. laughing so much, and they're going through all these kings? If you're, yeah, somebody, there's going to be some people out there that's going to be there like, well, if y'all going through all of this, how come y'all is laugh so much? And you could just be there like, hey, bro, I want you to know that that's what we call a defense mechanism. You learn it.
And we're sharing this for those who feel like they're the only one, because not to make you feel lesser than, but there's a lot of other people going through these things, and we're just sharing it to allow you to understand that you can find help and you can be a better person. And what one thing I do want to say is that when you go to therapy, or even if you just talk to a friend about it, or even if you just work on your mental health by yourself, one thing you have to do is, when you work on the positives, also work on your negatives, because none of us are perfect people. None of us, we all mess up. And when you go to therapy, try to be as honest and open, not just with your therapist, but with yourself. Point out your own flaws and try to work on them.
Yeah, like I'm a horribly toxic person. I just ghost people out the blue. But that doesn't mean that I have the right to ghost people out the blue, you know? So you gotta, I've come to a point now where, rather than ghosting people, I just message them less and less until they feel like not talking to me.
Don't do that.
It's bad, but it's progress, you know, rather than being like, and they call me Henry Houdini, the greatest escape artist from this chat you've ever seen. Of being like, yeah, well, if I make you this interested. And just the other day, I actually ended a conversation like a normal human being via WhatsApp. I even told the person goodnight. I was like, whoa. And then I felt kind of gross. I was like, ugh, goodnight. That's a little bit too emotional for me. I'ma just, yeah.
Wow, Dudley. Just wow.
You gotta let the moms and the women's them know.
Oh, but I found the post that I saw so I could read it for y'all. So he said, people with anxiety are often the go-to people in their circles. The fear of letting people down that you care about, coupled with needing positive results to soothe your anxiety, makes you very efficient, but also very drained from overdoing and helping. It's an oxymoron, but this is anxiety. And then someone asked what happens when we aren't efficient. And he said, catastrophizing happens and you experience a potential anxiety attack. So for people who are listening, if you are this person, listen, I need you to like do some research. And if you can't afford therapy, because not everyone could afford therapy, or if you don't have access to the free resources, such as if you're a university student, the schools normally offer counseling. Just try your best to be a better you. So you may have to go online and research and look up coping mechanisms, or maybe you say, okay, the next time someone asks me to do something and I don't feel like doing it, realize that I'm not obligated to do it. Because I have had to learn that whenever someone asks me to do something, I feel like, oh, I can't say no. I always have to deliver. But you don't have to. You don't have to. They're asking you a question. There are two answers to that question. Yes, I can. No, I cannot. And if you genuinely don't feel like doing it, or if you don't have the time to do it, don't. If you have 10 million things to do in your day and you know you can't fit it in, don't make space for it if you really can't fit it in and overwork yourself. Say, I'm not able to do this. Or if you don't want to do it, I don't want to do it. Start being honest with yourself and with others. So, yeah.
And speaking about being honest with yourself, one thing I've always known is that I'm not very good with my emotions, with sharing my emotions, and, or even understanding my own emotions. And sometimes that will hurt others, or it will hurt me in the long run. So one thing I will say from my personal experience is to try to do what you hate the most. So just like how Shanae had to learn how to say no, if my issue is working on my emotions or being honest and open with people, then try to be honest and open. Even if it make you want to peel off your skin, do it.
So in a completely different bit of advice, if you're more like me and you have anxiety attacks or whatever, I did this thing. So I used to do all the stuff. I used to say yes, 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 yes. And I used to MacGyver time to make sure that everything happened. And I got so drained. I got so drained mentally and emotionally that I became numb. I've been emotionally numb for a long time. So like I couldn't feel, in the same way that I couldn't feel happiness, I also couldn't feel sadness. So like, if you tell me something sad, I just look at you with a straight face and it's kind of like, and you know, when you want empathy from somebody and the only thing that they could do is look at you blankly is kind of off-putting. But the main way that I got over my numbness, I did something horrible. Something so, the same way Anise say do something that you hate, I did something so horrible, so disgusting, so vile that I couldn't believe that I had done it. I had opened up about my feelings to somebody. And I don't mean my therapist. I mean like I opened up my feelings to somebody who I consider a friend. And keep in mind, this is a person who I've known for over 10 years. They know a lot about my life, but they said something to me. And for a brief moment, for the smallest moment, I didn't like it. And I told them, well, I didn't like what you said because that made me feel bad. And they were so shocked by the fact that I said I feel bad. They've known me for 10 years and I've never said this to anyone in their presence. So they were just like, I'm so sorry. I didn't even know that you could feel bad. So when you get numb, a lot of people feel like they could just say whatever, do whatever, or ask whatever of you, because you're just gonna react. Your body has this subconscious thing where it just is like, well, okay then, because you're used to saying, well, okay, even if it's not possible for you. So doing things that you hate, it don't necessarily have to be saying no. It could be as simple as doing something like opening up. And trust me, opening up is hard. It's very hard.
Bethany, do you have any final thoughts?
For those who just need help, I think, and especially if they don't have the means to do so, they should just rely on someone who they trust, an adult who can help them, an adult who would be there in whichever means they need, because people just need to understand that everyone is going through something, and we have to be each other's keepers, because nowadays everybody getting shut down and killed, and so many people are dealing with so many things that we're not even privy to. And so we just need to be there for everyone. We need to be there for the people we love. And if everyone helps one person, I think that would be better than what we're doing now, instead of just consoling everything and internalizing things, because that isn't healthy.
Guys, you're not alone. You are seen, you are heard. And I promise you, you will have someone that you could turn to, whether it's a teacher, a friend, maybe even a coworker, someone who's just willing to listen. So if you are dealing with something, I really push you to talk about it. You may think that it doesn't help, but it does. Well, it can.
We said a lot today, and there's a lot more that we could have said that we didn't say. So, just take this as confirmation that there are other men and women out there who are definitely going through something similar to you. It may not be as intense as yours, or it may be more intense than yours, but that doesn't matter, because the only person who is going to ever live your life ever in this world is going to be you. And you have to feel as great as possible before you make it to the finish line. So if you need help from a therapist, if you need help from a friend, if you need help from your parents, because some parents are actually getting better at listening nowadays, social media is just helping them out too. If you need somebody to listen to, just look around a little bit, find the person who, when you talk to them, they genuinely listen. And that is the person that you confide in. And that's going to make your life so much better. Trust me.
By no means am I or my colleagues mental health professionals, but from experience with our own health and our friends and our family members' health, we encourage everyone to seek help. And whether that be asking a friend or visiting a mental health professional, you can contact the Ministry of Health and Wellness or the Bahamas Psychological Association for further information. Remember, we've all been through it. Ignore the negative biases and push for a better you. Invest in your mental health and you'll reap the benefits in all aspects of your daily life. I hope our listeners enjoyed our show today. Feel free to send us a message with any critiques, opinions, or ideas for future shows or guests. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Candid242. Thank you for listening, and keep it real, Bahamas.